how long until X and XAI are the same company? Because we know there's like financial ties and there's product integrations, and it really feels a little arbitrary.
I think the X shareholders got ownership in XAI. XAI needs to be, I'm not an investor in either, but I know the guy who's running it and a lot of my friends are. XAI is doing something interesting, which is, I think they get X's corpus, which is a huge advantage. So the huge advantage is what I was talking about on Glenn Beck today. The huge advantage is if you have a real-time data source giving you information. And so whoever's got real-time data, whether it's Reddit or X or Facebook, they're going to have such a huge, huge LLM advantage.
Yeah, well, they have a couple hundred thousand of my tweets, Elon. Where's my check? Anyways, everyone on the XAI investment team, you're welcome for all my tweets.
This Week in Startups is brought to you by Squarespace. Turn your idea into a new website. Go to squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Northwest Registered Agent. Starting your business should be simple. With Northwest Registered Agent, you can form your entire business identity in just 10 clicks and 10 minutes. From LLCs to trademarks, domains to custom websites, they've got you covered. Get more privacy, more options, and more done. Visit northwestregisteredagent.com/twist today. And AdQuick. Easily plan, deploy, and measure out-of-home campaigns as easily as digital ads. Visit adquick.com/twist to learn more. And just for Twist listeners, they're waiving their fee on your first campaign.
All right, everybody, welcome back to This Week in Startups, Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. We come to you live on the YouTube, on the X, on the LinkedIn, from my personal LinkedIn. We got a big docket here. I'm sorry I'm running a little bit behind, but I was on Glenn Beck's show, The Glenn Beck.
The Glenn Beck, yeah.
Who's still on the radio. I did not know that. So I guess, Jason, how did it go?
It was great. You know, he listens to All In, as some people are wont to do. And he heard me talk about AI and what an impact it's going to have. And you guys helped me with my little essay that I'm writing for my Substack. You can just Jason Calacanis on startups on Substack, you'll find me. But I'm just writing this little piece on the static team size and how, having spoke at UT a couple of times in the past month, these students actually think they're going to like get job offers. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think this is like 5 years ago where like Uber, Airbnb, Coinbase, the sort of upstarts are going to give you an offer. And then you're going to like work that offer against the classics, McKinsey and Goldman consulting firms. This is for MBAs I'm talking about. MBAs had a lot of places to go work. And I don't think they're hiring in these places all that much anymore. So be resilient, start a company is my best advice.
Yes, here's a headline from Forbes from January 15th. When Harvard MBAs can't find jobs, how the job market has changed.
This is going to be a permanent state of affairs. We see it inside of our tiny little 21-person outpost here launch, where we're getting more done. Every month, we do a little bit more. We get a little bit more done, but we use the same number of people because if you embrace the tools, you get 10% better. So I kind of went through the upside in these tools, which is if you use them every day and your boss asks you to do something and you haven't asked 3, 4, 5 LLMs, hey, my boss is a jerk. He wants me to get this done. He's totally unreasonable. How do I get this done and make him happy or her happy? And what questions will they ask me? What are the follow-up questions? You can literally give that prompt. And it's going to give you a really great way to address complex research projects or complex projects your boss might give you. And it could even anticipate what their follow-up questions are. If you don't do that, it would be kind of like, I don't know, you know, being a handyman and you don't type into YouTube, what does code 17 mean on a dishwasher that's not working? Like, you got to know what code 17 is. You figure out, oh, that's like this receptacle or this fuse, and you flip it.
That's not extreme enough. I think instead it's more like a handyman not using power tools. Like, can you imagine rolling up with like a handsaw, you know?
Or no tools. Just showing up with no tools. And
I'm going to use my
hands. No manual, no internet. Like, yes, yeah. Oh, it's not working? Yeah, let me kick it
I'm interested. Just one thing you said. So you don't need an MBA to start a company. Like a lot of the founders that we have on this show, they didn't go to business school. They just graduated high school or college and started a company. So do you think, is there any use case for an MBA at this point? Like if I was graduating as an undergrad, is there anyone you would be like, well, you should maybe consider business school?
I'm biased because I work with entrepreneurs. There are things you're going to learn at an MBA program. I would consider it kind of like going to a yoga retreat or a meditation retreat, that's incredibly expensive, like on the White Lotus.
Right.
If you can afford it and you can go to the White Lotus and do yoga or meditation and it costs you $10,000 a week, great. You could save the $9,900 and go on YouTube and learn meditation for $100 or for $0. And if you're a self-starter, you know, I would take the money your parents were going to give you for an MBA program. Let's say it was $250,000 to go to Stanford or Harvard or like a really elite school. You take that $250,000 and you do 375K businesses or so, you know, projects, you would go further.
Oh,
you would
yeah.
go further. So there's that. But, you know, some people have kids who don't have the chutzpah, the resiliency, the self-reliance, the executive function. So you're kind of sending them there to build that muscle.
Right.
Yes. It's finishing school for trust fund kids.
Here's the thing. UT is wonderful because it's 9K a year. When you talk about the value proposition, there's like two costs, opportunity cost, your time, and then money, actual hard cost.
Right.
You know, spending 50K on a degree and then graduating to a 50K a year job, that's fine. That's my 1X rule. Whatever you spent on the education, let's assume kids have more time than money, so no big deal. They spend 4 years growing up, getting through the maturation process of developing the frontal lobes. Yeah, 50K, you come out of school, you make 50K. You got to pay down 10% of your loans every year. You can do it quite effectively. And in 10 years, you'll be done with your 50K in loans. Or if your parents can afford it, maybe you have, you know, zero in loans or maybe halfway, 25. That's a big difference than graduating with 5 times your starting salary or 10 times your starting salary in debt, which means you'll never own a home and you'll never be able to get married and have kids because you're going to have a $1,000, $2,000 a month mortgage payment that you're paying to Harvard or Columbia. So anyway, I think that's sort of where I come at it from. But, you know, we have Founder University, which you pay $500 to go to with two of your friends, build a prototype. And if you come to all 12 weeks, we give you the $500 back. So I'm kind of thinking I've got a better model here that we've developed.
Yeah.
I might even take it to the point at which I charge $10,000 to go. And then if you finish, we invest the $10,000 back into your company. Like round trip it.
Yeah.
I was thinking like creative models like that. But I don't want to exclude people who, you know, maybe, you know, like myself, who wouldn't be able to afford the 10K.
You could have scholarships or something for people who couldn't pay the 10K up front, maybe.
We have people ask that for the $500. And what I say to them, I say, oh, you can't find $500? And they're like, well, I mean, I could. And I'm like, okay, yeah, we don't have a scholarship program. You don't have any way to find $500 and get it back in 12 weeks. What you typically get is the whiners and the entitled will come up with why they can't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then the other people are like, yeah, no big deal. I'll just, you know, I'll work Uber for 10 hours or I'll work Uber for 20 hours or DoorDash, make $20 an hour and I'll get it back.
Your body's going to replace that plasma. Yeah.
Okay. We got a lot on the docket. Let's get to work, gentlemen.
I think we should start with Nick Denton. And then Jason, after that, I want to dig into Project Europe, which is all about founders. But you wanted to talk about one, Nick's back. And two, he had a bit of a thesis about kind of the Trump-Musk thing. You wanted to dig into this?
Yeah, sure. You know, I'm always reticent to get into too much Elon territory because people will assume that I have some inside information. You know, I haven't been talking to Elon all that much since he's been busy at Doge. I'm kind of, you know, even when my friends are cooking, so I'm kind of letting them do their thing. So I don't have any information on this. But Nick Denton, for people who don't know, was a journalist. He's like a witty, bitter, interesting, intelligent journalist from the UK. He's old like me now, but you know, in the heyday, he created Gawker, which was, you know, absolutely disastrous and fabulous at the same time. It did incredible moments of real investigative journalism. It did incredibly loathsome things, as he would tell you, and got shut down spectacularly by Peter Thiel when he sued it because they were trafficking, Gawker that is, in stolen sex tapes. And he wound up, paying a ginormous settlement to the Hulk, the Hulkster. But he wants to be a journalist again, apparently. And he wrote a really interesting thread, I think, which touched on a lot of things in the news around BYD and some of the cars we've been talking about here. So we'll pull up his tweet storm here, and then just what the major points are and how we think about them. All right, founders, let's talk about your website. Yes, I know it's embarrassing. Yes, I know you're too busy to upgrade it. Well, if you're going to launch something new or you need to give your brand a refresh, which I know you do, you need Squarespace. It's the all-in-one platform that makes building a stunning professional website ridiculously easy, whether you're selling products, offering services, or showcasing your portfolio. Like I'm going to do with one of my kids. They want to go and do artistic things in the world. So I'm going to make them a nice, beautiful Squarespace site when they apply to college. Squarespace gives you everything you need to grow. And you know what? Obviously, you've heard me talk about how beautiful Squarespace's templates are, but now you can get a fully customized website in minutes with their AI tool called Blueprint. Here's how it works. You just answer a few questions and then you get a beautiful bespoke website in minutes, personalized layouts, visuals that are going to stun your customers, and voila, you're done. Want more control? Choose from award-winning templates and use intuitive drag and drop tools so you can make it your own. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy, you get to do it the way you want to do it. So here's your call to action. Just fall in love with Squarespace like I did. Squarespace.com/twist for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/twist to get 10% off your first website or domain purchase. That's squarespace.com/twist, the longest running partner for This Week in Startups, because they were a startup and they still build their product with the enthusiasm and the cutting edge technology of a startup founder. We love you, Squarespace.
Yeah, so we went through all of Nick's Twitter storm, and frankly, it was like 25 tweets. So we pulled out the four most important ones. I'm going to walk everyone through these really quickly. So the headline from Nick, I'm going to quote here, "The merger is complete. Elon Musk and Donald Trump, collaborators in the rationalization of the federal government, are now full business partners. Trusk Industries, I call it, with Trump as car salesman in chief and Musk as the genius founder." Jason, this is in reference to, I think, the Tesla show-off event they held in front of the White House in which the president endorsed Musk and his vehicles.
Trask Industries is from Marvel Comics. This is Trusk Industries. What you can take from this is Nick Denton is a fan of what's happening in Doge and apparently a Trump fan, because he's saying the rationalization of the federal government, which I think is kind of where I stand on it. Whatever you think of Doge, going too fast, moving fast and breaking things. I think we all agree waste, fraud, spending too much is common ground for everybody, independent of political aisles. We might obviously disagree with the process of doing it. So let's just make that note about Nick Denton's position here. It is true that yesterday Trump had Elon's cars at the White House. This is, in my interpretation, again, I don't have any inside information, a make good in some ways, a make good for Biden not inviting Trump to the White House and Joe Biden driving like a Corvette and basically stumping for the great American car company, GM. And I'm getting a Corvette, I think. I'm going to test drive one. The folks at GM are going to let me borrow an E-Ray.
Really?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a Corvette guy my whole life. I had a C6. And now that I'm here in Austin, I'm going to get a barn, like a man cave barn type thing.
Wow.
And I decided I'm going to collect one of each generation, C1 through C8. I'm going to have one of each.
I think when I first met you, you had a Corvette, like before
the yellow
Roadster. Yeah, yeah. Before that was like pre-Roadster.
Yeah. So I just, you know, I just have an affinity for them as a collector. So the C8 is the greatest sports car ever made in America. I'm sure Elon will one up it with the Roadster 2, which I'll also get. But yeah, I think that's my interpretation of it. And he goes on in his thread there, Nick Denton, and he's using X as the way to get the story out there, because doing a thread of 30 or 40 tweets like this is going to get him more views than doing it for the Financial Times. So smart move for Nick Denton to do that here. And I think Trump said yesterday, he had a funny meme. It's all computer. Is that what he said?
He said, everything's computer.
Everything's computer, which I think kind of sums up the last 30 or 40 years of my life. Everything is computer. Everything's computer.
The context there.
Is that,
for
wait
folks,
a second. Is that the new Radiohead album that just came out?
That's OK Computer with the Radiohead.
OK Computer, yes. Okay.
That's the most Gen X joke I've ever heard in my life.
Thank you.
Nick goes on his X thread to say, quote, "I'm also a technology investor. Unlike most journalists, I have skin in the game." Lots of thoughts about that. I'll get to that in a second. But quote, "My portfolio is long Xiaomi and BYD." And he's also betting against Tesla. Quote, "I put my money where my mouth is, and I'm now highly motivated." And then he goes on to kind of point out that as Elon works more with the presidency and links his cars to the administration, the two are increasingly inseparable. And Jason, I think the gist there is that their fortunes will rise and fall somehow together in a kind of conjoined entity way, if that's
sure,
fair.
Why not? Okay. But I think the more interesting part of this is, if we go down, is his warning about how amazing the Xiaomi cars are. So I think maybe jumping to that part is the most interesting part. Innovation in EVs is on a tear. And that was always Elon's big vision. He wanted to make EVs cool. Mission accomplished. Everybody's making them now. And these BYD and the Xiaomi ones are dirt cheap. And man, are they good looking.
Yeah. Here's the Xiaomi SU7, which is on the screen if you're watching the video version of this. It's one of the cheaper cars out there. And they've just made a sporty version of it. It's also not that expensive. And I really got to say, China has gone from being a laggard in EVs to being essentially now the global low-cost leader and in some ways a technology innovator. I didn't think they were going to get up to parity with the Teslas as quickly as they did, Jason. I know there's state support, but it's still an impressive growth, especially from Xiaomi, a company that we think of as a phone OEM. I mean, that's quite the jump to cars.
It is a trend that we're going to track here. 20K cars. Let's put it on our theme list along with static team size. But 20K cars that are sexy, that are self-driving. Elon's going to do that with the cyber taxi, which will go into production next year, I think around this time, he said. And, the Chinese have no respect for IP. They just steal everything. And if you look at those cars, they've stolen, you know, all the innovations from Tesla and other places. And Xiaomi, you know, made smartphones. What is a car? There it is. Donald Trump's mugshot. Wow. Everything is computer.
There's actually kind of a conversation going on right now. I don't know if you saw the Volkswagen CEO the other day was talking about he thinks we're going to move away from the everything is computer version of cars. He was like, they're putting buttons back. He's like, it's too much screens. It's not, I believe the quote was, it's not a phone, it's a car. So,
yes, indeed. Here's the full quote from the Volkswagen exec.
Yeah.
Basically, they're going back to physical buttons, which I'm not going to lie, suits me because they're easier to navigate when you're actually driving a car.
I got to say, I agree. Like, I have a Prius C. By the way, I believe MSRP is only like $22,500 on that. So close to a $20,000 car. I think it's pretty sexy. But when I rent a car and it's got all the like screens, like the Tesla-esque sort of interface, I'm not a huge fan. I'm old, but I do kind of like the analog kind of driving a little better.
The way they save money is by reducing the number of parts. As you reduce parts, you save money. You have the Prius C, is that right?
Yes. It's like their Honda Fit competitor, but I also had a Honda Fit before the Prius C. I like the Prius C a lot better.
Well, congratulations, Lon. Your car, according to Car and Driver.
Oh boy, here we go.
You want to guess the rating of your car on a scale of 1 to 10? My new Corvette will be a 10. My Model Y is a 10.
7? 6? 4?
Keep going.
Oh, come on.
Dude, come on. Car.
That's because Car and Driver likes cars that are for drivers of cars. The Prius C is a car for people who just want to get somewhere.
It's a city car. It's like boop, boop, boop. Like it fits in any little spot. Like I'm not drag racing in this thing.
Here's the dislikes. Reluctant to accelerate. Harsh ride quality. Not especially nimble. Congratulations, Lon.
Wait, what do they say about the Model Y? I'm looking this up. Car and Driver, Model Y.
Cabin is cramped for tall folks. Few available features. Backseat lacks cubby storage. I mean, they hate this car. It is safe. I'll give you that.
It's great for a big city because it can fit anywhere and it's very easy to navigate.
2 of 10.
They did give the Model Y, just for comparison, a 7.5, which is pretty solid grade, actually. No, Jason, 7.5 is not bad from Car and Driver.
I trust Car and Driver. That's my brand. And Doug DeMuro, I like too. What is the ranking, I wonder, on Car and Driver?
2024 Model 3 is an 8.
Okay, yeah. Okay. I think it's because the price of these is a little bit high is part of it. Anything else in his thread there? I just want to talk a little bit about the vandalism. I really don't like the vandalism as a form of protest. If you want to sit in the Capitol building, if you want to do peaceful Black Lives Matters protests, if you want to, you know, do peaceful protests on Columbia's campus, all good. When you start burning stuff, you start chasing people around, when you start, you know, breaking things or shutting down a bridge when people are trying to get to work, that's where I'm kind of like, yeah, no bueno. So I just don't like the violence in a lot of these protests that are going on.
I think we're kind of conflating two things in the discourse today around Tesla, which is it's always a little bit like troubling when that happens. Like there are the people in front of a Tesla dealership with signs, which is very, I think, legitimate public protest. Like they don't like Elon, they don't like the company. If you're on the sidewalk in front of a business and you're like, unfair, that's allowed. Everybody knows that's allowed.
Sure.
If you're spray painting somebody's car, if you're burning or damaging somebody's car, obviously that crosses a line. Now yeah. You're destroying someone's property. Legally, it's a totally different issue. So it troubles me to see those two things conflated into like any protest against Tesla is wrong. Like, no, standing in front of a dealership with a sign is fine. That's not domestic terrorism. It's damaging somebody's car.
Correct. Hey, founders, you want to build the next great billion-dollar business, right? Well, you're going to need two things, a killer idea and a properly set up company. I can't help you pick the idea, but I can help you get your business started the right way with Northwest Registered Agent. With Northwest Registered Agent, you can form your business for just $39 plus state fees, one of the most affordable options out there. No hidden fees, no upsells, just a simple, straightforward process. And here's how it works. In 10 clicks and 10 minutes, your LLC is officially formed and ready to operate. Northwest handles all the paperwork fast, accurate, and hassle-free so you can focus on building your business, not navigating all those crazy legal forms. Thousands of entrepreneurs trust Northwest Registered Agent because they make business formation affordable, efficient, and stress-free. And with their expert team standing by, you'll always have the support you need. So here's your call to action. Don't let paperwork hold you back from your entrepreneurial dreams. Get started today at northwestregisteredagent.com/twist. That's northwestregisteredagent.com/twist for just $39 plus state fees. Your business can be up and running in no time at all. Get more value, more convenience, and more peace of mind only with Northwest Registered Agent.
With this arson, what people have to understand is when you do that, I come from a firefighter family. Arson as a form of protest seems like nonviolent in some ways, like I'm burning something down. This is what happens with arson. The building next door gets lit on fire and the security guard or, the building next door, some mom and her baby get smoked, in their apartment and they die. It's not a wise idea.
No.
Just don't burn stuff down.
Don't start fires, people. Why do we have to come on our show and tell you not to start fires?
But I think the startup takeaways here are, if you, and this is the one that I think is important for people to get, for founders listening to the program, because I always try to bring it back to founders. If you pick a political side, you can lose half of your customer base. In a media enterprise, MSNBC losing the Republicans and Fox losing the Dems, that's great. There's enough left. The question is, when you lose half the people for a consumer product, like Bud Light did, right? Or like Elon's doing right now, Bud Light lost the Republicans, Elon's losing the Libs and the Democrats in some percentage. That's kind of hard for consumer products. So I think this is really challenging, I think, for the Tesla brand. Molly Wood, who was on this program, was a co-host for a long time. She traded in her Tesla for a Polestar because she didn't like Elon and the direction he was taking the brand. So I think Tesla's really got to think, and Elon's got to think long and hard about, after he finishes the Doge thing, building bridges and selling to all customers. And I think cyber taxi is going to be, a huge hit 2 years from now. And I think that's the future of the company. And so he's skating to where the puck is going. The Model Y refresh, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous. But it's going to be a tough year for car makers with all these tariffs and everything. Is there anything else in his piece that is notable, the dented piece that you thought, Lon or
He's saying, unlike other journalists, I have skin in the game. That sounds like other journalists are being lazy and cautious, but in fact, they're following traditional journalistic rules. Now, Nick and the Gawker crew clearly blazed their own trail, and here he is doing that again. But just don't take that as a...
And to be clear about that, he has investments in... he bought BYD stock, is what he said.
And Xiaomi, I believe, yes.
And Xiaomi. Okay, the Chinese stocks have been undervalued.
Skin in the game, that's the whole
thing. Yeah, he placed
the
bet. Yeah, I think he's kind of following the all-in playbook, which is, hey, it's all capital allocators talking about their bets in a way that random act of journalism, as biased as it is, gives you one piece of information. Traditional journalism, where you don't have a financial interest, should give you the other side of the coin, which is calling balls and strikes. Of course, we all know the problem is humans are fallible. And sometimes they do journalism based on their, you know, voting patterns or which party they're part of. And man, it's so hard to do a journalistic product these days that calls balls and strikes because you lose your audience and you're hated by both. I am hated by MAGA, as you've all seen in my replies. The only group that hates me equally or more than MAGA are the people on the left who believe that I'm part of MAGA. So MAGA hates me because I'm not part of MAGA and I criticize Trump. And the left hates me because they think that I'm too pro-Doge or pro-Trump. So you basically lose everybody. I've lost 60% of the audience because I won't pick a side, probably.
Well, hi, everyone who's still here. Welcome to...
Well, I mean, you're here to listen to startups, but I would say on the all-in, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Craziness. Literally, people are like, I hate J.Cal because... he criticized Trump coin.
Yeah.
And he doesn't get it. And on the other side, they're like, I hate J.Cal because he's supporting Doge.
Whether or not, like, whatever you believe, if this is fascism, if this is autocracy, or if people are just, you know, getting beyond themselves, or that's embellishment or exaggeration, whichever you believe, once the discourse gets there, where that's being thrown around every day, you guys are fascists. It becomes very hard. Like, what's in the middle of fascism and not fascism? Like, those are kind of binary things. So
yes.
I do think it's just going to get harder and harder to be like, I don't pick a side when those are the sides.
I mean, you were I think a double hitter as well, Lon.
Me?
You were a double hater, weren't you?
Oh yeah. I definitely get it from both sides all the time. Of course.
You hated both candidates. All right. So other stuff in the news, we got inflation data.
Yeah, so running people through the headlines here. So CPI, the Consumer Price Index, was up 2.8% year over year in February, below a 3% rate in January. That's what you want to see. You want to see that number go down. Better than expected. On the core front, which strips out a couple of things to give you a less volatile number, it was plus 3.1% year over year. Again, better than January. Stocks, Jason, pretty happy with this. The expectation that is if inflation comes down, there's room to cut rates. So tech stocks are up today. Tesla rebounding from its prior declines. Nvidia rebounding from its prior declines. So a couple stocks we've seen trade pretty hot lately are regaining some territory today. And I'm sure that's popular with investors around the world.
I don't look at the stock market day to day all that much. Or certainly I'm not day trading. Great companies are going to grow through these. The most important things for founders in the game and startups listening, just focus on your customers. And all this meta stuff that you see, like inflation, et cetera, it's fine to understand it. It's fine to geek out on it, but probably not going to change your day-to-day. You have a certain amount of runway. You know, raising money could be affected on the margins by it, but great companies that are growing, let's call it in the early seed stage, 10% month over month, which is a pretty easy bogey to hit. If you're growing 10% month over month, you're doubling every 7-8 months, you're going to be just fine. So eyes on the prize. Focus on your growth, focus on your team.
Some big news today, and we're going to bring Harry Stebbings on to talk about this. Couldn't quite get him on for today's show. We tried like hell, but didn't quite work out. The point is Project Europe. Now, we've talked a lot on this show about American dynamism, Jason, how American companies have the leading market caps in the world. America's leading the AI race, blah, blah, blah. Big deal. So the thing is, in Europe, there's a new effort called Project Europe, and it's about 120 European technology folks, like the leaders over at Shopify, Klarna, Mistral. And they're teaming up to invest and mentor younger European founders. Ah. They're putting together a 10 million euro fund that'll put 200,000 euro into individuals who are building stuff. And critically, they're going to assign a founder who's already been successful to that young founder to provide mentorship. So it's kind of like a hybrid venture capital teal fellowship model to build more startups in Europe. And I think this is brilliant.
Sounds like Founder University a bit. I like the mentorship model. That's always good. When they do this Project Europe thing, are they taking equity in that person's company or is it a grant is the question? Are they giving people 200K like a grant, which is what Teal Fellows does with 100K, I believe.
90% sure this is equity. This came out literally this morning, so we're still chasing down every single details of the terms. But given that 20 VC, 0.9 and Adjacent are all putting their capital into it, I don't think they're going to be giving away
their...
Then it's
just a Y Combinator knockoff with a different spin. So not impressed. If it was 100K or 200K that you just gave as a grant to the person,
Yeah.
That would be disruptive. Doing this, not impressed. It's just a Y Combinator knockoff.
Founders, let's talk about building your brand here in the real world. We know digital ads are amazing, but if you want to stand out in 2025, maybe you need to think a little bit bigger. And a great way to do that is out-of-home advertising. Yes, you know, those really impressive billboards you see everywhere, or even the beautiful murals that everybody loves. This is how you build a brand. And AdQuick makes out-of-home advertising easy, measurable, and fast. They've taken the headaches out of OOH. You've probably heard OOH, out of home, by combining ad tech precision with real-world impact. So now, planning, deploying, and tracking your campaign is as easy as running digital ads. With AdQuick, they're going to hyper-target your campaign in minutes. Then they're going to use their data and technology to ensure your ads reach the right audience every single time. Plus, they're going to give you real-time insights to measure performance and optimize your spend. So whether you're building brand awareness or looking to drive customer action, right? You want to acquire customers. You can see why AdQuick is trusted by everyone from the fastest growing startups to the S&P 500. Take your brand to the next level with AdQuick, the smarter way to do OOH. And just for Twist listeners, AdQuick is waiving their fee on your first campaign. That's an amazing offer. Get started today. AdQuick.com/twist. That's AdQuick.com/twist.
So Harry, after dropping the news, the Financial Times covered it and sifted to cover it, said that in the first couple hours, he had another 4 dozen founders ping wanting to join. His argument is that Europe can build. I'm much more bullish on this than you are, Jason, because I think what they need to do is reverse the brain drain and stop having people leave Europe to go build in Silicon Valley. And with more capital, more mentorship, and frankly, better vibes, like optimistic feeling, I think you could keep a lot of folks in Europe. And I think also the rearmament of Europe, the removal of the German debt brake, and I would say rising EU polite nationalism are all going to be things that consolidate and kind of help founders stay and build in Europe, which is going to be good, I think, for American tech companies, more competition. And also, I think it's going to be good to have another pole apart from the China-Russia axis. So I'm surprised you're not excited about this. I thought you were going to be all like, woo!
About it pragmatically in terms of innovation. The reason I'm not impressed is it's not innovative. It's a copycat kind of thing. And it's self-serving. So in order for it to be a movement and be disruptive, the reason Peter Thiel's was so disruptive is it was a grant. And what he did that was really interesting about it was those people became loyal to him because it was a grant. And he was still able to invest in them, but you still had then wild cards like Pirate Wires, I think, came out of it, or other things that weren't necessarily financial. So it just feels derivative, not particularly innovative. And if you're a founder, first-time founder, and you stay in Europe, that's a bad decision. It's just a terrible decision. Coming to America, coming to California, coming to Texas, coming to New York will be much more accretive to your business. Terrible idea to stay there. If you're a serial founder, fine. If you're in the Nordics, perhaps. If you've got an investor there who's a lead investor who committed to you, great. But for every Klarna, for every Spotify, it's de minimis, the impact those European companies have had.
Even like you don't think like London you could start a...
The problem is they're all anti-entrepreneurship there. The reason why this is notable in Europe is because they're so anti. The reason this is needed in Europe is because they're so anti-entrepreneur. When you're in London and you say you're running a startup or you're an entrepreneur, people look at you like you're a charlatan, like you're a con man, like you're a grifter. Entrepreneur equals grifter in a lot of these markets. I'll leave the Nordics out of it because they have a special sensibility for design and a special sensibility for building product that I think is very unique to them. But, you know, they don't have big winners coming out of Europe for a reason. It's because they treat entrepreneurs terrible there. Harry and the Spotify people are the opposite, but it's too many headwinds. And I think when you're an entrepreneur, what you want to do is remove as many of the headwinds and things that can flip the car, and you want to increase the number of things that could be tailwinds. If you're running a company in Europe, you're going against the jet stream. You're going to burn twice as much fuel. It's going to be slow and dogged. Might be, to your point, Alex, that there's some great change that's going to occur and Europe's going to get their act together and be more entrepreneurial. I doubt it. Europe is Epcot Center right now, as far as I'm concerned. It's a place for tourists to go and you know, get to see like this old world charm, and you can bounce from country to country, and it's quite charming. But they treat their entrepreneurs terrible.
Okay. So I'm not going to try to go through that, but I think the idea here is there's a lot of people who want to change that. And so here's hoping that works out. Though I do want to say, Jason, if we lost 60% of our audience because you're not picking a left or right side here in the States, I think the other 40% were the Europeans, who are also now gone.
No,
so hello
no.
to nobody.
I think they are exactly agreeing with me. I think anybody All who's right. a European entrepreneur or a VC is probably nodding because, Jesus, like they want to regulate every company. They want to make it harder to build platforms. They don't have Section 230 like we have here. You can't fire people. It's not as fluid as an environment. The regulations are crazy. You can't do M&A. It's just the worst place to do business. It's a terrible, terrible decision to do business in Europe as an entrepreneur. Just, you got to go where the action is. It's like, if you wanted to be in hip hop in the 90s, you go to New York or LA. If you want to be in tech, you come to Austin, New York. You know, maybe you go to, I would say Dubai or Abu Dhabi or Riyadh. If you're a European entrepreneur, you go to those three cities. They're going to throw money at you. They're going to celebrate you. They're going to give you a golden visa, and you're still going to be able to fly home and ski wherever you want or go, like, you know, spend your summers in Italy.
I'm glad you've given me this opening because you've mentioned Riyadh in this context a few times. And I know things are changing in the kingdom. Like, I understand.
Faster than you could imagine.
I understand there are progressive people now, yes. like, sort of looking to, well, in some ways progressive, but like, how far along would you say that process is? Would a Western person today going to Riyadh find a traditional kind of city where they can do all the usual things they're used to doing in a normal city?
So let me work backwards. Dubai will feel just like New York to you.
Right. I mean, like, Dubai, we've sort of established is this kind Correct. Of very, like, Western friendly, like, you can get a drink at a bar and, like,
totally.
People dress however. Is that yep. is that Riyadh as well now?
That's what Riyadh's chasing. And I'd say they've closed 80% of the gap. And so when you look at what they've done in Dubai, Riyadh's just right on that track. And they are particularly obsessed with entrepreneurship and creating companies. And we'll have a big announcement about some work we're going to do in the kingdom that I've chosen to do. I'm going to make the announcement next month, but I have been spending a little bit of time over there, and I believe company formation in that region is absolutely critical for democracy in the world. That whole region has its own power base, plus they're trying to get pulled towards China, India, and Russia. On the other side, and, you know, in the BRICS kind of situation, and on the other side, they're trying to get pulled into the West, and who they align with in the future is going to determine, I think, human rights. It's going to determine democracy. It's going to determine, peace. And it's going to be one of the great forks in the road, I think, in our lifetimes, is where do those countries end up affiliating themselves with? Now, they're their own entities, they're monarchies, et cetera, but personal freedoms, economic freedoms, those things are all starting to happen in a major way. And I'm particularly excited about it as somebody who worked at Amnesty International and cares about human rights and cares yeah. about entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can't bring edibles to Saudi Arabia, so I'm going to, you know, politely pass for now. I mean,
interesting you bring that up. I think that their view on alcohol has changed. And the tourism is the big attraction there. So they're doing new cities like Neom and stuff like that. So in those cities, Westerners are going to be able to have alcohol. And I think can assume that cannabis or other things will come after that. I did this tweet the other day. It got a huge reaction on my Twitter where I said, hey, here is my protocol. You know, like, Brian, everybody's got to have a protocol. So since I'm an influencer now and a micro celebrity, I got to have a protocol. Very simple. Sleep, exercise, diet, meditation. Focus on those four. And then I gave sort of sub things that I'm working on. Everybody knows I'm on a health kick. And I'm doing it for myself, for my daughters, my family. I just want to be around and I want to be healthy in my older years here. Man, has it worked for me? I got a 99 sleep score.
That's off the charts.
I slept with the bulldog last night. It dropped down to the 80s. What am I going to do? Max was in the hospital. He's safe now. He had a pneumonia. Happens. These bulldogs are like fine-tuned machines, like they're like Ferraris or something. They're always in the shop. So I felt like I needed to sleep with them. But you know, I kind of did this protocol and I have, and this is kind of a startup. My understanding is Brian Johnson, who's going to come to the All In thing tomorrow night here in Texas, that he is making $100 million a year on the blueprint. As I said, maybe you pull that up one more time so I can read it. I have those top four things I'm focused on. But then I'm telling people, hey, listen, see if you can add two or three of these things without your phone. Play a game. I played Clue with my twins the other night. We had a riot. Read a book. You'll see some more physical books on the shelf here. I'm just starting to get into just 15 minutes of actual physical reading as opposed to audiobooks, which I do when I'm hiking or driving. Listening to music. Shout out to my friends at headphones.com, Andrew over there, who I'm going to do a partnership with, because I've been so taken by, he's very generous and sent me these $5,000 headphones. And I listen to them and man, I'm really hearing the music and I'm using Qobuz. I'm going to become an influencer in this space next. Cook some meals together, share a meal with folks you love. I have institutionalized my Thursday night dinner with my friends here in LA. Lon, you've come to the ATX Supper Club. We have a 6-person dinner. We book out the best restaurants over like the next 12 weeks. One of my friends is doing that, William Barnes, who worked at Uber, and we're good friends, and he's here. So we just go every Thursday to a different restaurant. Hang out with animals or kids. I do that hiking, walk in nature. I do that every day on the ranch, or I try to. These are the things that are going to help you. Sleep is the new drug in the startup community. People are leaving events at 10 p.m. saying, I got to get a good night's sleep. I got to get a good night's sleep. I'm tracking my score. You measure it, you manage it. Whoop, 8 Sleep. They all do a great job. As does the Apple Watch in doing this. But anyway, I like Harry. I think he's got great intent here. Can't wait to talk to him about it. Maybe he's floating a balloon. We'll see what the terms are. And then, so the terms on the 200K, also important.
Yes, very important. Okay, moving on. I'm going to throw this in because I think it really matters. Anthropic, Jason, the AI foundation model company backed by Google, Amazon, lots of investors, et cetera, has grown its annualized revenue, according to the information, from about $1 billion run rate at the end of 2024, to $1.4 billion. As I said earlier, 40% growth from $1 billion foundation in less than a quarter is insane. And, you know, frankly, I think this kind of makes a point. I think their valuation now is somewhat reasonable. The question, of course, is can they keep this pace of growth up? But holy crap, that's a lot of revenue really fast.
If it's true, it seems like that would be really great revenue growth. I'm assuming this is not for the consumer product. This is for the API. And that they've seeded the consumer product race to ChatGPT and Gemini and Grok, yeah?
Yeah, so OpenAI makes more of its money than, more of its money from ChatGPT subscriptions than its API. Anthropic's the other way around. But keep in mind, they also dropped Claude 3.7 and then also Claude Code. And they are inside of a lot of the breakout stuff. So everyone's talked about Manus. Well, that's some Claude technology built in there. Okay. We had the CEO of Replit on the show. That's Claude. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So people are really using what they built to make products. And that's why I think it's durable and not churn at risk.
The great news for startups is you can get these API credits from Google Cloud, which we've had a partnership with. You can go to getstartupcredits.com. I put all the credits that we're doing at getstartupcredits.com. You sign up there, you get white gloved, just doing this as a service to our founders. So go to Get Startup Credits. You can get the Google credits there. Other credits. People are giving AI credits out to startups, you know, like candy, which is great. And, you know, people are building their systems so that if, you know, one service gets too expensive, they can move to another, or one is better, you know, at images than voice, you can move it around. And so the big winner in this race is going to be startups. They're going to keep lowering the prices. They're going to keep increasing the value. And I have always believed that the application level is where the value is going to be. I think that these companies are in a race to the bottom and it's getting so cheap. When we had Raul from Superhuman online, he said they're writing their summaries for your emails ahead of time. Most people, like you do a Google search and it does that little real-time snippet from Gemini. Mm-hmm. So they're not wasting time, you know, building these results ahead of time. I don't believe they're doing that, like in caching them. It's getting so cheap that it's going to run on your M4. You're going to have a local version on your phone ripping through stuff. And so, you know, let's say you wanted an analysis of every MP3 on your phone, every audio file. It might just do that in the background and have it sitting there for you. Why wouldn't it do it? If it was going to do an analysis of your photos, you know, normally it would wait till you query, hey, show me all the bulldogs. It might take the top 10 queries, top 20 queries and run them every day and then present you with the results in a proactive way, like a great employee might, a great team member might be proactive. So we're going to see some really interesting things happen here as this stuff plummets in cost. And it's still trading at what, 40 times revenue, 50 times?
About 40 right now. But given that their base case is about $2.2 billion in earned revenue this year, their more aggressive case is like 3.7. So to me, that multiple is going to come down precipitously. Sure. And I think they're building not just a technological moat, Jason. I think they're building a brand. Like, I think Claude's, the Claude family of models, people just trust and like because they're good and they have taste. And so I think that's really worth something.
There's more competition to come. I think, you know, what we saw with Manus recently, that's got millions of people on the wait list. And it's like an, you know, agentic, which just is a fancy way of saying agents, which is a fancy way of saying...
does stuff.
Personas that persistently do stuff. We used to call them cron jobs back in the day, just jobs that run every hour, run every day. And so, you know, Lon, you frequently will look through, like, you know, the subreddit for entrepreneurship and startups and This Week in Startups. And then, you know, we have other communities. You're going to be able to write an agent. We could do it right now. Maybe Lucas from our team, who's good at this, could write an agent that goes to, you give it all the places you like to look. It goes to those places in the morning and sends you an email or posts it into our production team. Here's the interesting new discussions that I found. And then you click from there. So that first level sort, it might do for you. And that's, you know, really powerful stuff that's going to happen or is happening right now.
It's an interesting thing with these AI. We were talking about this a little bit before the show with these AI models and branding, because some of them, just like you guys have been saying, they're kind of more discreet. It's not like everybody's going to Claude.com and using it. Like, a lot of good products that people like are being built on top of Claude, but Claude's kind of this discrete layer. So it's interesting how some of these AI companies like ChatGPT are already becoming brand names that are very familiar, household names. They're very visible, but others like Anthropic and Claude growing just as fast, if not faster, but kind of under the surface, like everyday mainstream people might not have heard of Anthropic or Claude yet, even if they're using a tool that was built on top of it.
The number of people using ChatGPT every day is extraordinary. I think they were in the top 5 or 10 websites in the world.
It was six or seven on the chart we were looking at the other day. Yeah.
So they have an incredible consumer business there, you know, independent of anything else. And the ChatGPT is kind of like the verb. It's kind of like saying taking an Uber. And they also bought chat.com. So, you know, this is the innovator's dilemma that Google has. When you do a Google search now, I think it does a snippet every time, right? If you're logged in.
Pretty much. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's worse. It gives you a snippet, Jason, and then it gives you 4 ads. So like they really do not want you to use the blue links because that's not the Google offering now. Sigh.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think people, you know, ChatGPT's got really good consumer adoption. But by the way, before Google came out, Yahoo had all that user adoption. So it's quite possible that there'll be a better product than ChatGPT, and that whole thing could just collapse.
We were saying Grok is nipping at their heels now.
Grok, you know, inside of X, where you press that button and it gives you the context. We talked about it on All In last week, is a really killer feature that I think most people who use X haven't even realized, but there's a little Grok AI in the top right of every tweet. So you take my tweet where I did, you know, hey, here's my protocol. If you pull that tweet up and you hit the Grok button, I'm curious what it says there.
Here is the Grok summary and response to, Jason, your formula for a good life.
And it is a reasonable encapsulation of who I am, and it gives you a good starting point. That's not a really great one because what I'm saying is really simple. How healthy do you think that Jason is? That's funny. Yeah, here you get a little bit of a deeper one. But if you were to pick, let's say, Zelensky talking about something, you know, and you want the background, that's where it gets really interesting. Or if you were to, you know, click on talking about Colombia losing like its grants or something, that's when you could get into like a really good background, because you might not know if you look at, I retweeted somebody from Colombia who lost their grants.
Yes.
And he's like, oh my God, this is so shocking. And I'm like, Colombia's got a huge endowment. They could easily afford this. Like, and these elite universities, like, they, I don't know why the taxpayers are paying for elite universities with hundreds of billions of dollars to do their research, they should be given the grants from their endowments, which just continue to grow to a level of absurdity. I'm going to put that aside for a second, but if you were to find one of those, yeah, this is me saying, hey, FAFO, and it thinks it's fell off and no.
That's a very polite edit there, Grok.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one. Yeah, that's F around, find out. But okay, if you click on the quote I was retweeting, that's the one to click on, because here with this person, you know, Professor...
Edward Goa.
This is where it's a money. Look at this. A Columbia University bioengineer professor shared an email from the NIH announcing the cancellation of his integrated musculoskeletal training program. This really explains the background in such a great way. This is like if I were to send it to Juan and say, what's going on? Or you, Alex, and said, hey, what's going on here? You would write me back. Here's what's going on. That's really compelling for me.
How long until X and XAI are the same company? Because we know there's like financial ties and there's product integrations. And it really feels a little arbitrary.
I think the X shareholders got ownership in XAI, and XAI needs to be, I'm not an investor in either, but I know the guy who's running it and a lot of my friends are. XAI is doing something interesting, which is, I think they get X's corpus, which is a huge advantage. So the huge advantage is what I was talking about on Glenn Beck today. The huge advantage is if you have a real-time data source giving you information. And so whoever's got real-time data, whether it's Reddit or X or Facebook, they're going to have such a huge, huge LLM advantage.
Yeah, well, they have a couple hundred thousand of my tweets, Elon. Where's my check? Everyone on the XAI investment team, you're welcome for all my tweets. Okay, so Pokemon Go, the company behind it, selling the games to another company for $3.5 billion.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's Niantic.
Niantic is selling its games business.
Yeah, Cyan Bannister was an investor in that. So they're selling that. Pokemon Go, for people who don't know, is the first augmented reality game to hit scale. These things were going on in Japan for a long time. Augmented reality, when you put digital assets in the real world through the camera. And you remember people were like driving around trying to find these Pokemon Go characters and getting in car accidents.
It had that huge pop culture moment. I mean, Hillary telling people Pokemon Go to the polls. It was like a big deal. I, in my mind, think of it as being like it fell off and it's not a big deal anymore. But that's not actually true. It still has a huge fan base of people that remain obsessed with playing it and are still driving around looking for Pokemon. It's just like it stopped being a headline, but it remains like a huge mobile.
Who bought it?
Scopely.
Okay.
Which, what's that? Well, it's owned by Savvy Games Group. What's that? It's the Saudi PIF.
The investment fund in Saudi. This is their sovereign wealth fund, which owns everything from sports teams to doing the investments in NEOM. I think it's sort of the umbrella. It's run by a gentleman named Yasser, who I met when I was there. And they have a group, Sanabel, that does the venture stuff. So they have a dozen activities they are investing in that they believe will be the businesses of the future when maybe pulling oil out of the ground isn't necessary, right?
Yeah.
Or, you know, it runs out, which they think is a 30-year story, 40-year story. And games would be one of those. And so remember I said earlier, this is not dumb money. There is a perception in our industry that the money coming out of the MENA region is like dumb money. They'll just invest in anything. You go there, you secure a bag, you leave. Au contraire, mon frère. These are some of the smartest people I've ever met in business. For decades, they've been sending people from Abu Dhabi, from Saudi, from Qatar to the you know, West to become educated and to work in places, and then they come back. So they're boomerangs, and they have this King Abdullah scholarship. There's all these scholarships. And when I meet people over there, Oxford, Harvard, you know, University of, you know, Hawaii, everything in between, like literally, it's not just, you know, Ivy League schools. And then they've worked at Google, at Sequoia, wherever, you know, top venture firm. And then they've gone back. They're not just putting money into venture firms. They're on the boards of companies. They're doing company formation. They're doing roll-ups like this because of the sovereign wealth funds. They can take a 20 or 30 year view of investing. So they're not just giving money to Masayoshi-san like they did for his, you know, giant fund. They're now making thoughtful decisions and rolling up companies. That's what we're seeing here. That's what we're going to see a lot more of.
And for context about the roll-up part of this, so Scopely, the company that's actually buying the Niantic gaming assets, I believe is the company behind Monopoly Go, which if you're a hardcore gamer, you've never played, but that means that you're outside the mainstream. It's, I think, the second or third highest grossing mobile app of 2024. And to the point that Lon made about Pokemon Go still having staying power, I think it was the 13th highest grossing game. And keep in mind, that's hundreds of millions of dollars. Like, mobile gaming is huge. And I really got to agree with Jason. I am a bit more critical of MENA governments than some folks in this space. But hey, what I will say here is this is smart. This is buying a serious company, doing a serious roll-up. I have to say, if you're going to diversify off of, you know, digging stuff out of the ground, great place to do it. Great use of money. No complaints.
It's a brave new world, folks. We are not living in a unipolar or a bipolar world where it was like Russia and the US. It's multipolar now. And that's, you know, a lot of, I think, what's informing this administration, whether you like it or not, whether you agree with it or not, we all understand it's multipolar now. There are regions that have their own sovereignty. And the EU now, as you pointed out, Alex, I think very correctly, is like, you know what? The United States is not the piggy bank. They're not going to fund what we want to do. You know, we have our own world. We'll do what we want to do. Canada's like, oh, you guys want to nag us? Great. We have a lot of hydro. We'll just turn off your electricity. We'll sell it to somebody else. Like, I think the United States sometimes believes we have a little bit more influence than we actually do, and that people, you know, will just do whatever we tell them. They will not.
I think it's the people our age that remember a time when that was still kind of true. Like, if you grew up in the 80s, the 70s, the 90s, America was kind of the you know, the pivot point around which the whole world sort of was organized.
Yes.
And we still think of it that way, but it is not true anymore.
It's not true. And the EU can go it alone. If we don't want to back Ukraine, if we don't want to be involved in that, you know what? The EU has plenty of money. These are sovereign countries. They have a vested interest in containing Putin. They're going to do it themselves.
Yes.
They're going to make their own weapons. They don't need us.
But the tension that I find here is that the U.S. is saying, multipolar world, go off and do your own thing. And then we're turning around and saying, EU, stop finding our companies. Well, do you know how you have influence over those things? By having soft power.
Yeah.
And if we don't have that, then we're going to have to eat some crow along the way. I'm not taking a position in this conversation, but I'm just saying, you can't have a win-win when you're not going to win.
Yeah, the idea that we're going to be able to be splashy cashy around the world and buy influence, that's ending. We're broke as a country. That's just the truth.
Woo!
We don't have the ability to spend like we used to. And so whether you agree with, you know, the velocity and the chaotic nature of the current administration, which, you know, if you ask anybody who's a Republican, like, they're like, yeah, this is chaotic. Putting all that aside, we're in a multipolar world right now. South America is going to make their own decisions. Canada is going to make their own decisions. Obviously, MENA, India. India is, like, I think, really the most interesting one to look at. They are going to make, everybody believes, like, oh, we have influence, whatever. India's like, yeah, we're the largest country in the world. We're the fastest growing economy. We have the most number of people going from poverty into the middle class, going into the upper class. We've got this great education system. We've got a driven... India is the America of the 21st century in many ways, in a way that maybe China isn't, because it's more democratic, right? It's not a perfect democracy. You can look up the democracy ratings. China can never really compete in a sustained long-term fashion in entrepreneurship because they keep rug pulling the entrepreneurs. If you rug pull the entrepreneurs and you don't have a vibrant investment system and it's top down, it can't really be vibrant in the way a competitive playing field in the United States is, or in Europe to a lesser extent, or MENA, the Middle East, North Africa region, or India. India really is fascinating to me. I need to spend more time in India and Singapore. I'm going to go to Singapore for the first time, and then I need to spend some time in India. I really think that's the economy I have the least knowledge of firsthand, and I need to get up on. Yeah.
All right. Just before we jump, I do want to say there's news that TSMC is working with other chip companies to possibly put together a deal to buy a chunk of Intel's foundry business.
Great.
We'll see about that, but something to keep an eye on. And then Gail Slater was confirmed to run antitrust for the DOJ.
Okay.
She's a little more hawkish than I think Jason's going to be excited about, but her term will kick off. Something to keep an eye on. And then Gemma 3 models from Google, apparently very good, very cheap, and very efficient.
It's going to be really interesting. in terms of Gail Slater, there's a lot of saber rattling. This administration is going to be very pro M&A. They just like to have they like to have influence. I think this is like why the tariff thing is so appealing to them, because having a tariff system means everybody's kind of got to come and bend the knee and negotiate. M&A is the same tool. Now everybody, whether it's Bezos with Amazon, you know, or Zuck with Meta, you know, the weather vane of, you know, the political weather vane known as Mark Zuckerberg, you know, he's going to want to buy TikTok. He's going to want to put a bid in. He's now going to have to go through Gail. He's going to have to bend the knee. He's going to have to come to Mar-a-Lago. And this, you know, kleptocracy approach is very real. And you're going to have to bend the knee and you're going to have to come. And this will give the president undue influence, I think, over, you know, this corporate landscape. Net, net, Trump likes influence. Trump likes money. Trump likes success. I think they're going to let it rip. They're going to let it rip. Anyway, this has been another great episode of This Week in Startups. He's at Lons, L-O-N-S on X. He's at Alex. I'm at Jason. We're all in the 4 or 5 letter club. Woo. 4.3 letters between us on average. And you can read the docket that Lon and Alex put together at thisweekinstartups.com/docket.
Yes, sir.
All right, everybody. We will see you next time on This Week in Startups. Bye-bye.